We going?
Yes.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. Not every gift is a blessing. I'm joined by my gift of a co-host, who is always a blessing, Mr. Ryan.
Blessing, not a curse.
Our tagline for this week, not every gift is a blessing. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you are right and we pick you, you win a glorious Movies on Up prize package.
We will gift it to you.
Which we've been giving out weekly for 6 years now. This is our 6-year anniversary episode.
Giving out weekly is probably a loose interpretation.
Yeah, we've maybe given out 6-ish. Maybe a little bit more. But
we've given out the ones to people that have won.
Yes. We are Movies on Up. He's Ryan. I'm Dave. This week, a little bit different. It's our 6-year anniversary episode. We don't know what to do for anniversary episodes because we don't like getting
flowers and candy and
like
stuff.
Self-congratulatory or whatever. I mean, 1 year we went over numbers about how many episodes we've done and stuff. And that was, I think, 2 years ago. And we try to keep it more personal. And I feel like last year's was really, really good. It was fun because it was like, what movies are we... I forget how we worded it, but it was just... We got to talk real personal level on movies because I think the one thing we wanted to do coming into this podcast is there's so many bad movie podcasts, and it's so easy to watch a bad movie
and
make fun of it. And it's so easy to be so negative about movies. And I think one thing we always wanted to do was... We're just dudes that like movies. Anything I see, I try to go in with some sort of a positive outlook and try to look for the positives in it. And for 6 years, we've been able to talk about movies. And, you know, obviously there are movies we don't like and we don't hold back and we don't pretend to like them when we don't. But
more often than not, I mean, I think probably
we pick 98%
of the movie, that we've talked about, it's been stuff that we've liked.
Yeah, I mean, we're the ones that pick movies we talk about, so we tend to pick ones that we don't. I mean, we have done movie episodes on ones that maybe I don't like or Ryan doesn't like, but it's fun, and for the most part, like, we just love movies. For the 6 year, what we're doing is... There was a thing going around online on Twitter where people are tweeting pictures from like 4 movies that define me. And I thought that was a cool exercise. And it is kind of something that I had been thinking about anyway.
It's a stupid list.
Yeah, it's a stupid list. And
that's something
we like
around here.
And building up into this year of Movies on Up as we enter year 7, we've talked about doing different types of episodes. And one thing we're going to do is we're going to try to have some guest episodes this year. And instead of having a guest come on and talk about a stupid list or talk about a specific movie, we're just going to try to get more personal with guests, and we're going to have them bring 6 movies that they feel define them, and they'll explain.
6?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It just got harder, guests.
Whatever. But
they'll bring
because there's
number.
Only one list. Yeah, there's only the one list, so we can do 6. But figure that gives them movies to talk about. They could tell us why we love them. We can say if we agree or don't agree, and maybe it opens us up to new movies. So we'll be doing that at some point this year. Nothing set in stone yet. And we'll probably try to do a couple more casual episodes this year. Not so news heavy like we used to, but maybe just more laid back episodes. But that's coming up this year. So we thought, let's do 6 movies that define us. But instead of me doing 6 movies that define me and Ryan doing 6 that define him, we did each other. Which
it was just as great as
we
you would
just
imagine.
Two dudes sitting in a small room with mics on, just doing each other.
Sweating, doing each other.
So he's going to do 6 movies that he feels define me. I'm going to do 6 that I feel define him. And then at the end, we each did 3 that we feel define the podcast, so we'll have 6 that we feel define Movies on Up. What was your thought process going into this? Like, what kind of rules or anything did you have?
No rules. It's hard, because these are not my guess on Dave's 6 favorite movies.
Exactly, and that's not what we wanted it to be.
Right.
Yeah.
They are movies that, when I think about Dave, which, I mean, sounds a lot creepier than what it is. But I think in my explanation of these movies and why I chose to apply them to Dave, I think that you may not necessarily agree, and but you, I mean Dave, you specifically may not agree with why I have applied them to you, but I think that people will see my rationale behind it. Again, I don't think they're your six favorites. I know you like all these movies, so that kind of helps. They're all been movies that we have talked about on this podcast before. So I don't think it's going to be six movies that have never been mentioned on this. I would be willing to imagine that every movie that we bring up has been mentioned on this show at some point in the last 6 years.
We've probably done, I'm sure some of them we've done episodes on, specifically that episode.
I can guarantee it.
Yeah. So let's just start. What's the, in any order, I have some sort of order.
I don't have an order.
I'm just, they're not like, this is the sixth most defining movie.
Right.
I just have them in a specific order for no specific reason. But what's one of your six movies that you feel define me?
I'll start with one of the ones that we have done a movie episode on. And it is a movie that you like. And it's a movie that I hate. And it is 1989's Deep Star 6, directed by Sean S. Cunningham, starring Greg Evigan, Nancy Everhard, and Taurean Black. I think for the better part of the last 6 years, Dave and I have tried really, really hard not to be miscast as movie critics or film snobs in any way. So much so that the word film is never really used on this show. It's not because we don't want to be film critics or that's not something that we think we could do. I feel like that's not really who we are. We each have guilty pleasures, and I think Deep Star 6 is one of Dave's. We did an episode a couple of Halloweens back, a Deep Star episode. So take a listen if you want to know just how hard someone is willing to defend a guilty pleasure. And I think maybe the 1980s specifically might be home to a disproportionate number of guilty pleasures for Dave, not just in the horror genre, but action, drama, you name it. I think Dave would argue that Deep Star 6 has horror and action and drama all within it. But one thing I would never argue is that Dave is passionate about movies. He likes what he likes, even if no one else likes it, and he has no problem letting you know. When we got together to want to do this, we were just two dudes that liked movies, wanted to talk about movies that we like. And it's very easy to sit back and talk about a movie like Star Wars or Infinity War. There's that movie's mentioned this week. Everybody likes that. But when we're able to talk about a movie that maybe you haven't seen, you've never heard of, that I liked as a kid, here's why I liked it, let's go back and rewatch it. We did that with The Last Starfighter, which is a movie we both liked, and that was a lot more fun for me.
I liked it still. I thought I held up.
Yeah, I mean, it was more fun for me than Deep Star 6 was. But to have those movies that we are passionate about, that nobody else likes, that you'll go to bat for, I think that's Dave.
It's from 80s, and I could tell you why I love it, and I'll compare it to like Sunshine and even Alien, and like it has all those elements that make me love those movies, and I absolutely love
it. That's the first and only time anyone will ever utter Deep Star 6 in the same breath is Sunshine and Alien.
It's not the first time. I've done it before, I'm sure. But it and Sunshine,
only
I think,
you.
Are very, very similar movies to me, and I love them both. As I got to you, I knew I would have to go out of my wheelhouse a little bit because our tastes overlap a lot.
Yes.
Way more than I think. I mean, we don't disagree about a ton, but I feel like your taste is a little bit more expanded than mine. You'll joke that if it's before 80, like it's not going anywhere near my list.
There aren't any movies on here that are before 1980.
Well, there is one from before 1980. Think. Well, there's a couple, but the first one is from 1977, written and directed by Dario Argento. It's Suspiria. Because I knew you are more keen in the history of film, and I'll say that.
Oh, there's that F word.
Yeah. You have been more keen in your life to go back, and I like this horror movie. This director said he was inspired by this director, so you'll go back and you'll check that director. And you watch a lot more foreign language stuff than I do. Movies are a lot of background to me, so I can't watch a lot of foreign language. Not that I can't read, but it's just,
it's hard.
I have trouble paying attention. So I need something it's almost background fodder. And I didn't want to get super obscure because generally when you're talking about old ones, like I kind of zone out. So I couldn't think of like, here's one specific one that he mentions a lot. But you do like horror a lot, obviously. And you do like the classics. And I feel like Suspiria is a classic horror movie that is a foreign from a classic all-time director. So maybe it's not one of your favorite movies, but I know Suspiria has a spot in your heart.
Absolutely. It's a movie that I go to bat for a lot. I think it's one that a lot of people haven't seen because for the reasons you mentioned, because it's old, because they don't speak English primarily in the movie. But it's one that I feel like, man, if you're a fan of horror, you should check it out because you're probably going to like it. And maybe that is, I think it's easier to maybe define your wheelhouse as it is to mine.
I think mine's is more narrow wheelhouse. Yeah,
but I would think that my next movie fits right in the absolute middle of your wheelhouse. And it is from all the way back in 1991, directed by Kathryn Bigelow. It's Point Break, starring Keanu Reeves, Patrick Swayze, and Gary Busey. Now, this is not a guilty pleasure for Dave. It's a much better movie than Deep Star 6. He unabashedly loves this movie. And Dave's mentioned on occasion that he may have received some of his love of movies from his older brother, Gary. Now, I never met Gary, but I know that he loved some action movies. The bigger, the dumber, the better. And I think there's a reason that Dave went and sat through Hurricane Heist, and there's a reason that he's so hyped to see The Meg this summer. It's not because he particularly thinks they're going to be good movies or can't wait to see how Jason Statham manages to arm wrestle a shark.
A megalodon,
yes, I get it. He doesn't think those movies are going to be good, but Point Break is a movie that is actually, I mean, it's good. It's much better than it should be. Starring Keanu Reeves in that era, Gary Busey in that era, Patrick Swayze in that area. Right, Lori Petty, surfing, bank robbing, skydiving. That's all hot garbage, as evidenced by the remake. There's not a good movie there, but somehow Kathryn Bigelow was able to make it a good movie, but that's not even why Dave liked it. It's because Gary impressed that on him. And that's the reason that he's excited to watch Hurricane Heist, because that's a movie that Gary would have liked, and you guys could have gone to see that together. We all watch movies for different reasons. It's entertainment, it's nostalgia, to see Anne Hathaway's boobs. But underneath all of that, we watch movies because of how they make us feel, or at least I think that's why we do it. That's why I do it. And a big, dumb action movie may make me smile and laugh at its ridiculousness, but it makes Dave feel something different. And I think that Point Break is probably the best example of an action movie that gives Dave a different feeling than anybody else.
Yeah, and I mean, I've told this story before about it's one of my favorite movie-going experiences ever, because me and my brother sat through it twice in a row. Like, it ended, he asked me what I wanted to see next. I said, this. So he went out and got two more tickets for it, and we just sat there and watched it. It is a good action movie. I like crime movies. I like crime dramas, and a main reason I like them is because you get to know the criminals, the villains in them, and I think that's a thing Point Break did, is it's not just these two cops chasing bank robbers. It's Johnny Utah against Bodie. So it's character versus character, not just good guy versus bad guy. So I mean, that one. And the thing is I was going into this and I thought, like, oh, I think mine are obvious. And this is one that I would think, and Deep Star 6 did not surprise me. And, like, I could probably rattle off a couple others that'll probably be there. Yeah. So it's like, I mean, I can't argue. Like, it's dead on. For yours, for the next one, I tried to stay outside my wheelhouse a little bit. You know, I went foreign with Argento. You do like film noir. I know it's one of your favorite genres, and they're not making them like they did. Like, it used to be such a big thing, and, you know, I had a more modern noir on here, but I felt like when it was put with the rest of them, I didn't feel all six of them really defined. So I went back before 1980 to 1940, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. I did Rebecca, and I'm not sure your exact thoughts on this specific movie, but I know you like noir, and I know you're a classic director guy, and I know you like Hitchcock. So, like, I know you like Rebecca. It may not be your favorite noir. With this one, I covered a couple bases, and that's kind of what I...
Check the Hitchcock box for,
yeah,
sure.
Like,
yeah.
That's kind of what I did, is I had some check boxes, because I came up with I have a couple also, right? And I'll explain why, because I wanted to kind of encompass everything. I could have done three Hitchcock, three Argento, or like, I could have done groups of them, and I tried to kind of encompass everything, because, you know, I have a wheelhouse that I like, and yours is a bit wider. I tried to cover about as much of it as I could.
I love most of Hitchcock's movies. It's hard almost any genre or any list. Like, if I really tried, I could probably put one of his movies on there. He's a prolific director. So, yeah, I mean, this is it my favorite film noir? No, but that's not the exercise, is to pick my six favorite movies. I could list off a couple noirs that I like better, but there isn't a noir director that I like more than Hitchcock, and to have that be sort of the director pick, I'm totally okay with it. My director of your next movie is not as prolific as Hitchcock, but I would argue, as much as I really like Hitchcock movies, they don't necessarily touch a string within me quite the way that maybe David Wayne movies would with you. So I picked, no surprise, Wet Hot American Summer from 2001, starring Janine Garofalo, David Hyde Pierce, Michael Showalter, Paul Rudd, Ken Marino, Joe Latrullio, Michael Ian Black, Amy Poehler, and some guy named Brad. Dave's finely honed sense of humor, I think, can be attributed to, amongst other things, sketch comedies like The State. And when you've basically got a movie that is The State, it's always going to appeal to fans of that show, if maybe not the masses in general. A lot of times we struggle to define what a cult movie is. This movie is a cult movie. It didn't necessarily do well at the box office, but what it did do was create a very loyal following of seemingly like-minded individuals. It's almost like a club atmosphere. If you meet somebody that likes this movie, you're not trying to keep it to yourself. You're trying to show it to other people, because if they like that, then you will probably like them. Sometimes movies, and not every movie, you can't go to somebody and say, hey, do you like Forrest Gump? Oh, you do? We should be friends. You got to go a little bit narrower than that. And I think Wet Hot American Summer is a narrow movie that you can tell. I don't want to say you can tell a lot about a person on how they feel about a given movie. That's a little bit judgmental. But I think you can tell if they're like-minded, if they have a very similar sense of humor. And this is a very specific sense of humor. And I do think that it stays.
Yeah. And I mean, I've said all the time, my sense of humor was shaped by The State and Mr. Show. And I think I brought this one up on last year's episode where we talked about movies we're most thankful for or whatever, because this did help me settle into my friend group here in Ohio. You know, I had my friend Zane in Indiana that I loved The State with, and then I came here. And it wasn't until discovering that I had a group of friends that liked Wet Hot that it's like, okay, we're the same. And you're dead on. I'll never judge somebody for liking or disliking a specific movie. But when it comes to sense of humor, it does tell a lot about you. And something like Super Troopers or this, which are so narrow and so specific, like, I could definitely understand watching it and not finding it funny. You just have a different sense of humor. But if somebody says, like, oh, the disaster movie was hilarious, that's fine. If you want to laugh at that, that's okay. But that just means we have different sense of humors. And comedies are a little easier to distinguish that, especially ones that are so far one way or the other. Yeah, it's a solid, solid pick. My next one, it's one that I almost put down as one of the ones that we'll talk about later for the show, but I didn't because I thought maybe you did, and spoiler alert, I know Ryan's, and I didn't want to have it on both, but it is from 1982. We're getting more into my wheelhouse. It's directed by John Carpenter. It is The Thing. You know, I talk about Suspiria, like, you love horror movies, and you're one that if you're introduced to a movie you like, you'll kind of want to go back and watch some of those influences. I think The Thing is one of those first love horror movies that got you into, you know, you watched it when you were younger than you know.
Younger than I should have been.
Yeah, younger than you should have been, and you loved it, and it's still with you, and we've watched it, we've done an episode on it, it still holds up, it's still one of the greatest movies ever made. And I mean, like, yeah, you love horror movies, but what we talk about is this isn't a good horror movie. You know, it's not a good sci-fi movie, it's just a great movie. And I feel like both of us are drawn more towards those kind, to where it's a great movie that kind of defies a genre, and this is it. It's a character study, very much like Deep Star 6, where it's a bottle environment, to where, you know, the deaths matter with the practical effects. It's a great, great movie that holds a very, very big spot in both of our hearts, and I know that it developed your love of horror movies a lot, because this was basically at the ground floor of your horror movies.
Yeah, this was the first John Carpenter movie I ever saw. I didn't see Halloween prior to seeing The Thing. But after I watched that movie, it blew my doors off. It was one of the few movies. I had several on like a VHS tape or a couple VHS tapes. They used to just watch all the time. This was one of them. I shouldn't have been watching it, but I think after seeing that as a kid, there's really nothing movie-wise that's really going to bother you. So that kind of scorched my taste buds at that point. But, you know, as I got a little bit older, you know, it is what caused me to go back and watch Halloween. Everybody knew about Michael Myers, but I knew about John Carpenter, so that's why I wanted to see that movie. It made me go back and watch They Live, which I love as well.
Escape from New York.
Yeah, exactly. I went back and watched the Howard Hawks, The Thing from Outer Space from the 1950s. I didn't start watching movies, old movies, just willy-nilly because I thought, boy, there's nothing good out now. It's because you want to see where the thing came from and you want to see what brought us to where we are now. And goddamn, I love The Thing. That's a movie I think Hitchcock would have loved.
Absolutely.
The suspense. I will ease some of the suspense on what the next movie is. Dave talked about crime movies and how he really likes them. So, I mean, yes, there's crimes committed in Point Break, but I don't think that's the example of the crime movie that Dave likes. There's perfect movies. Heat is one of them from 1995, directed by Michael Mann, starring Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Val Kilmer, Tom Sizemore. Once or twice, Dave's mentioned that Heat is a perfect movie. I almost wish I had a board to write down, number one, how many times he's mentioned that Heat is perfect, and number two, how many times he said, I don't call a lot of movies perfect movies, but this is a perfect movie.
There really are.
There's more than you would think.
I don't know. This and Gone Baby Gone.
And Deep Star 6. As I said, Dave loves him a good crime movie, and this is one of the best. And I am just speculating here, but I think that Heat is the type of movie that once you see it, you find yourself craving more movies like that. You'll take a deeper dive into a genre, searching for something that can give you that same fix you got from Heat. And I think seeing and enjoying Heat may have led a younger Dave to check out, and again, this is all speculation, or may have played a role in Dave checking out the Guy Ritchie stuff, which in turn would get Dave into watching movies like Filth. So in a roundabout way, I think Heat led to the creation of the highest honor we can bestow on an actor in this podcast, the McAvoy Award, that in a movie we'll talk about later. But it's hard to tell why we like what we do. But sometimes you can sort of see a thread there that may lead you. A kid growing up in Ohio doesn't start watching Welcome to the Punch and stuff like that. You have to get there somehow. And a movie like Heat, I think, is a great gateway drug for great crime movies.
Yeah, especially, it's going to be weird because it's a movie, I'm comparing it to a movie that I openly haven't seen, and there's no real reason I haven't seen The Godfather, but I think The Heat is my Godfather. The Heat is that crime saga epic
everything
movie.
Gets compared to.
Yeah, so that is my Godfather, you know, because like even like Goodfellas and Casino and stuff, like the Scorsese stuff, I've seen in passing, like in bits and pieces. I've never focused on, because the mob and the mafia stuff, that wasn't my crime genre. Like, I don't mind it. I do like some of it.
Because you didn't grow up in Youngstown.
Yeah, yeah, I grew up in circus capital of the world. But, like, Heat is more what I like. And Heat is, I mentioned, when you have villains that are people, when it's character versus character, instead of good guy versus bad guy, like, that's what I'm drawn in. This led me to something like Bottle Rocket, which I said, oh, those guys are on a heist. Like, that's cool. And then Bottle Rocket leads me to something that might get mentioned later for you.
Every Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah. It leads me to Lock, Stock, because, yeah, you know, Lock, Stock was one of those harder to find ones. And then that leads to Snap. And I've always been fascinated with, in sports, with coaching trees, you know, like Bill Parcells, Bill Belichick was an assistant. And then I do the same with movies, where you mentioned like The Thing led you to this movie, which led you to that movie. And it is very much where I'll always have, I can kind of trace an origin. So I remember seeing Bottle Rocket not long after Heat, because Heat was such a good crime movie that I realized, like, oh, this is what I like. And, you know, I saw it a little later because he was, what, 92? What year is he?
He was 95.
95. Okay, so it's around then because this led me to Usual Suspects and Bottle Rocket and Lock, Stock and all that stuff. So, yeah, I can't. I kind of had a feeling this. I mentioned that it's a perfect movie quite a bit.
Yeah.
For you, it's another crime movie, and we all have that moment, not necessarily just with movies, but where something hits you and you realize, like, oh, this is what I like. And it opens your eyes and it shows, like, oh, this can be done different ways. Like, you know, you could taste something that you've never thought, you know, you could put grape jelly and barbecue sauce together and taste the best kielbasa you've ever had. And it could change how you look at everything else. And I feel like you got that at about the right time when 1994's Pulp Fiction came out, written and directed by Quentin Tarantino. I feel like it opened your eyes to a lot of different storytelling types and showed you kind of how creative movies can be and how inventive and originative. And I feel like that's where your kind of love of directors almost came from. Like, I mean, you had John Carpenter already, but he had his wheelhouse that he stayed in. And I feel like Pulp Fiction might have been the one that opened your eyes to be like, oh, storytellers can tell different stories and make them really compelling along the way while not following these rules that everybody does. And I feel like this opened your eyes to almost look at movies differently and kind of mature your taste. Like, when it hit you at this point, you're what, 14 or 15 at that point?
94, I was 10.
Okay. So when you saw it a couple years later, I feel like it kind of maybe changed your perspective on what you like about film. And I'll use the F word there. I feel like it kind of gave you a different appreciation for what a filmmaker does.
That's all 100% accurate. I mean, Pulp Fiction to me was the first time that I was able to recognize sort of a director's fingerprints on a movie. And it helps when the writer is the director because it's very much in a style. John Carpenter doesn't necessarily have a style unless that style is fucking awesome, in which case, yeah, he does. But I think people know, especially nowadays, know what a Tarantino movie is, or can imagine if Tarantino is going to do Star Trek, this is what it might look like or what it might sound like. And before I got into even, you know, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction was my introduction into that, to nonlinear storytelling, to parts that don't necessarily advance a narrative, but it's just cool to see. That movie certainly does belong on my list. It's probably one of my favorites of all time. I know this one is one of your favorites of all time, and you put a couple of horror movies on mine, so I'm going to put a couple of horror movies on yours because that's a genre that we venerate around here. October is, I almost feel like it's the culmination of our year. Not that we don't talk about horror movies any other time, but we really like to make a big deal out of that and celebrate them that entire month. We did that, I think it was last year. I don't know. They run together at this point. We did celebrate Gremlins from 1984. That's Joe Dante's, I'll call it a masterpiece, because it is, starring Zach Galligan, Phoebe Cates, and Hoyt Axton. So I'd already picked a horror movie for Dave if Deep Star 6 could be considered a horror movie. I just had a comedy movie with Wet Hot American Summer because those are both genres that Dave has an appreciation for. But I think what Gremlins does such a fantastic job at is being equally proficient in both genres without sacrificing scares or laughs, albeit very dark laughs. And that's kind of where I'm going with Dave. The fireplace story that Phoebe Cates tells is one of the darkest scenes in any non-rated R movie that I can think of. Somehow it's hilarious. And if you pay attention to some of the jokes that Dave makes on this show, or you could somehow hear some of the jokes that I cut out, you would recognize that tone. While Gremlins is an all-time favorite for Dave, I think it checks the horror and the comedy boxes. He holds the sequel in very high esteem as well. And Gremlins 2, I think, would maybe check that guilty pleasure box, though he'll never admit to it being bad enough to be called a guilty pleasure. I think it encompasses several parts of the whole that is Dave.
That's a perfect segue into the next one for you, because I also went from 1984 a movie that could be classified as horror and comedy. It is Ivan Reitman's Ghostbusters. Very much like Gremlins is for me. Like, these are movies that they do mix that horror and that comedy. And obviously Gremlins is more horror than Ghostbusters. But they're movies that we saw young and that we fell in love with young that we could still watch now and love them just as much now. You know, I just saw Ghostbusters in the theater last year, and then I saw Gremlins in the theater this past December. So, like, a lot of our love for movies, Gremlins for me and Ghostbusters for you, which is, it's funny because those were both 84
from the same year, yeah.
And in the same, like, I think they're a couple weeks apart. So for that to be so defining of our taste, because we saw them so young and they're still up there with our favorite movies. I know it's one of your favorite movies, just like Gremlins would be a top five movie for me. And I'd almost felt insulted if Gremlins wasn't one of yours. I feel like it'd be the same if Ghostbusters wasn't one for you, because when I think of your taste in the movies you like Ghostbusters, I think sums up a lot of everything. The good jokes, the dialogue, the wittiness, and just, it's a great story with great characters.
That might be my wet hot. I mean, Peter Venkman does kind of encompass my sense of humor. I do love Ghostbusters, and I have never considered it a horror movie. I understand, and I will never argue, but I think it's one of the best comedy scripts that I have ever seen in my life. So, yes, I absolutely love Ghostbusters. It has a very special place. If anybody asks me any given, what's your favorite movie? I don't know. What are your five favorite movies? I don't know. You could probably ask me 100 times. You may get 100 different combinations, but I would be willing to bet 100 times out of 100, Ghostbusters is going to be in there.
Same with Gremlins for me. I'll always say it's a top five movie for me. It is.
I might have another top five one for you. And it was tough to pick between a couple, but I think I made the right call because you've already referenced it when talking about great sci-fi movies that are of the ilk of A Deep Star 6. In case you don't remember, Dave had brought up Sunshine from 2007, Danny Boyle's movie that we have just done an episode on, I feel like maybe a month or so ago, starring Cillian Murphy, Chris Evans, and Rose Byrne. I think that movie fans go through a couple evolutions. You may start watching movies or appreciating like a certain actor, like, oh my God, I love Tom Hanks, I want to go back and watch every Tom Hanks movie, or if Tom Hanks is going to be in a movie, I know I'm going to like it, or I know I'm going to watch it because I love Tom Hanks. I think that's kind of the easiest thing to do. They're in front of the camera. They're what you see. They're what you spend an hour and a half to 2 hours with. And then I think you may notice that there might be a specific director that you may like, and then start watching his or her stuff, regardless of who the movie stars or even the genre. I became a Tarantino fan, so I would go back and watch Reservoir Dogs or Jackie Brown, or I would can't wait for Kill Bill because it's a new Tarantino movie. And I think the next evolution past that is writer, you know, if it's not the writer director are the same person. And I think as an aspiring writer, Dave pays special attention to those guys and gals. Shane Black's a writer that gets a lot of run on this show, and deservedly. I don't know that there's a Shane Black movie. We love them, but I don't think they're quite as high or as representative of what Dave thinks that writing can be, like Alex Garland. That dude takes the backseat to nobody in the writing department. And I think it may be harder to connect all the movies that are written by the same person. But if you start to pay attention to that, I think that you can discover a ton of movies that you wouldn't think to watch because I don't know any of these actors, or I've never heard of this director before, but it was written by Alex Garland or Shane Black or Diablo Cody or whoever you want to throw in there. And I think that's really what we're about, is trying to pull the thread and to find movies. Dave and I are always looking for something that we're going to enjoy. We don't want to watch stuff just because we're bored. It's because we want to enjoy it. And one of the easiest ways to do it is to find someone involved in that movie that you know you like their work. And for Dave, I think writing, whether it's sci-fi or comedy, whatever it is, that's a good way to get Dave hooked. This is also the movie that gave us the McAvoy turn, as it was first performed by Chris Evans. The Evans turn just doesn't have the same ring to it. But this is one that maybe could have made the podcast list. I think we both love Sunshine an awful lot. But I think it's made maybe more of an impact on Dave individually than it has on the show.
This one doesn't surprise me to be on there. I figured this or 28 Days Later would be on.
Those were the
there.
Two. I needed an Alex Garland movie because I wanted to talk about writing.
I've been open. Those are two of my top three favorite movies ever. And, you know, I think 28 Days Later probably would qualify as my favorite movie ever. But for different reasons, I think Sunshine, weirdly, is the better choice. Because I think it encompasses more about what I like about stuff, about, you know, Deep Star 6 and everything else, like the contained stuff. But
Deep Star 6 mentioned more on this episode than any other movie.
It is
our
Deep Star 6th year.
Yes, it is.
Now I'm kicking myself for not making that the tagline. I did some other movie with 6. I don't even remember what
the I can make that was. The title of the episode, so that's all good.
Your number one, or not number one.
Whatever, the last one.
It's obvious. I had to go with, from 1977, written and directed by George Lucas, Star Wars, A New Hope, Episode 4. We're both Star Wars fans. That's pretty obvious. I mean, you are more into the entire... I like the movies. You're into the entire universe. You've gone to the conventions, and I was into it because I loved it. My brother loved it. We had the toys. You know, like, that was something for us to enjoy together. And I like the movies. You, I feel like it's been a bigger part of your life. It's been almost maybe like your introduction to loving movies. Like, I'm sure you'd seen them before Star Wars, but like, this might have been one of the first ones that you absolutely fell in love with and then fell in love with the world. Even people that don't see you every other week to talk movies, like, know you like Star Wars. So I feel like I couldn't leave it off. And generally, we try to leave off the obvious ones.
Yeah.
But on this one, I couldn't, because I feel like your love of Star Wars is so ingrained in your love of movies. You do like sci-fi, which leads to horror, and some of your favorite horror movies have that space sci-fi element to them. So I just feel like this is one of those that it started at the top, and whether it's going back to watch Hitchcock, or it's like in film noir, or it's love and horror movies, I feel like there's a grain of all of that trickles down from your love of Star Wars.
It's not my favorite Star Wars movie, but it's the one that should be on the list.
The other one might come up later.
Maybe. This is The Last Jedi. Shit. You know, without A New Hope, we don't have anything else. We don't have books or TV shows, all of which I consume voraciously. But George Lucas is one of the directors that I identify. Not that I became really interested in going back to watch American Graffiti, but hearing him talk about his influences for Star Wars, and specifically genre influences, whether, you know, it was Star Wars is a space Western. So, all right, well, let's go back and watch a Western like High Noon. Hey, this is kind of cool. Or he was very interested in when he made the Jedi Samurai. So he was watching the Kurosawa stuff. So I would go back and watch Seven Samurai, Rashomon, Yojimbo, all that stuff. And that came from, you know, A New Hope. It wasn't even the first Star Wars movie I ever saw, for Christ's sake. But without A New Hope, we couldn't have Empire, so.
And I went with New Hope because it is the first one, and I think that just encompasses Star Wars. Yeah. Like, that's... Were there any also-rans that you almost put?
You know, like I mentioned, 28 Days Later was tough because I needed an Alex Garland-written, Danny Boyle-directed movie, and I could have gone, you know, one of a couple ways. It was tough to leave off any that... I mean, I don't really have a ton of English movies on there, and you do love those a lot, Australian movies. But I don't know that they're even also-rans. I feel like these were the first that came to mind, so they were the right one.
There were some that I thought maybe... Because I was trying to think. It was fun to think, like, oh, what might... And the ones that weren't, if were represented elsewhere. Like, I thought, like, oh, Die Hard, I think, is an easy one. But to have Die Hard and Point Break on there is repetitive. They're interchangeable for why I like those movies. And then Snatch, which you represented with Heat, you just went more to the head. Any on that I left out that you feel were obvious ones? Or
no, I don't think so. I mean, again, like, I wasn't thinking of, like, what are my favorite movies. Because, I don't know what they are, and that wasn't the exercise. I'm not even sure that I have the perspective to know what defines or, like, what represents me.
Yeah, it's such an open-ended...
But I agree with the ones you put on there. Like, yeah, Reservoir Dogs, all that stuff, 100%. Yeah.
And it took a bit to get it down to 6.
Or Pulp Fiction. That was the one that was on there.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction was. Because I had Monster Squad was one of the first ones to come to mind. But I feel like Ghostbusters represents a lot of the same stuff.
It does.
More strongly.
I mentioned Shane Black, and Monster Squad is one that was in there.
I had Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
So both of my also-rans are Shane Black movies.
Yeah.
And that's, I was biting my tongue when you mentioned them, because Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was kind of, I kind of replaced it with Pulp Fiction, because I feel like that was bringing your favorite genre into modernized. But,
and it was. It,
but I feel like Pulp Fiction makes a bigger impact on you.
It did. I mean, without Tarantino movies, I probably don't appreciate Shane Black movies. To be honest, if a Shane Black movie opens opposite a Tarantino movie this week, I'm watching the Shane Black one, but it's because of Tarantino.
Yeah. Read them through from the top. Just do the six real quick.
Deep Star 6, Point Break, Wet Hot American Summer, Heat, Gremlins,
okay,
and Sunshine.
Yeah, and yours, I did Pulp Fiction, Suspiria, Rebecca, Ghostbusters, The Thing, and Star Wars. I thought it was fun, though. Like, I thought it was cool, like, because, I mean, we do have our tastes cross a lot, and it is rare for us to disagree, and when we do disagree, I think it's fun because it's not just, we like so much of the same stuff that I find it interesting when we do disagree.
That'll probably come up here
soon. Yeah, and I, because that was one of, so we're going to do the same thing.
Was that the crossover one we had?
No. No, it was the more obvious one.
Yeah,
it's one that I, the three you did, two of them I had thought of, but I was going to wait and see. They were kind of, I said I was going to do six in case there was crossover. Yeah. Those are two that I would have been on there.
I just didn't want you to have to feel like you needed to do all that work, because I didn't want to.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure I had three and they weren't crossover, and there it is.
Yeah, so I would add five. So it just saved me from having to do one more.
You're welcome.
But, so let's start with your first one. What do you think is one of the six movies that kind of define us as a podcast?
It's actually the first one that came to mind. It's not necessarily my favorite episode. I'm not even sure it's the best one we've ever done. But if I were a guy that looked at downloads, I could probably speak with more certainty. But I believe that our Smash discussion way back in July of 2013 remains our most downloaded episode. The movie had come out in 2012, directed by James Ponsoldt, starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Aaron Paul, and Nick Offerman. We did that because Spectacular Now was coming out, so we, in our infancy, it's not the first time we had done a movie-specific episode. I've got one on my list that predates that. But it was when we were, I think, trying to find our feet in those kind of discussions.
It was one of the first we didn't go beat by beat.
Exactly, yeah. And if I would have known in 2013 that that's as good as it was going to get for us, I guess I should have just quit while we were ahead. But why I think it specifically represents the podcast is it's a movie that Dave and I had both liked. And I don't think we knew that we both had seen it and we both liked it until we started talking about it. And certainly what we did know about it is that we felt that it was underappreciated or maybe underknown for as good as it was. And that's one of the things I think that we both wanted to do independently on this show is to use our platform, such as it is, to tell folks how great a movie like this is. And going all the way back from the bonus we used to do and the watch this is, that's what this show has been, is trying to find movies that if you're listening to us, chances are you like the same kind of movies that we do. And if we saw something that we think you may have missed, we want to make sure we mention it. We want to make sure we tell you, hey, check this out. You'll love it. One of the things that we would love is, because we think you guys are like-minded, if you've come across something you think we've missed, let us know. That's what, you know, this is kind of all about, is just trying to share really cool stuff with people. And I think this movie was really, really cool. I was happy to share it.
And I think this was one of the only ones where we got, like, I think Ponsoldt retweeted it. Or I think it's one of the only ones where the filmmaker actually engaged.
I think we've only made like six tweets.
Yeah.
If you make tweet, I don't know what you do, but so, we got a good record.
I mean,
we don't
generally tweet at the people that we do episodes about, but I think this one we did, and I think he responded. I don't remember the exact details. The first one that came to mind for me, it's similar to one of the first ones that came to mind for you. It's Empire Strikes Back. We're both Star Wars fans. We both love the Star Wars movies. This is both of our favorites. I mean, a lot of our podcast is designed around Star Wars. Like, other than the Clone Wars, there isn't a Star Wars movie we haven't done an episode on. We like Star Wars, and we're not anti-sequel, and I feel like this is one of those sequels that almost, it's unfair, but a lot of things get compared to. I always consider Empire Strike Back moments, like when heroes are defeated, and I just feel like this is for a movie franchise that dominates so much of our discussion to be our favorite, for us to agree on that as our favorite, I feel like deserves that spot.
I will never argue with Empire Strikes Back being put on any list. So yeah, that's fine with me. One movie that we will argue about and have argued about and probably will continue to argue about is Josh Trank's Chronicle, also from 2012, starring Dane DeHaan, Alex Russell, and Michael B. Jordan. Most of the time, Dave and I agree on whether or not we like a certain movie. One of us may like it more than the other, but generally speaking, earning a thumbs up from one of us is good for an affirmative from the other. Few movies in Movies on Up lore have been more divisive than Trank's fantastic supervillain origin story, Chronicle. We like occasionally to break format around here from time to time to try and keep things from getting too stale. One of my favorite ways to do that is to argue with Dave, whether it's the Rise versus Dawn of the Planet of the Apes debate, or if Dave actually is a real Star Wars fan and we talk about Last Jedi. The episodes that we don't have the exact same opinion on a movie, I do think tend to be maybe a little bit more fun and more fun to record, certainly more fun to prepare for, in as much as we actually prepare for this show.
This is one that came to mind just because it was, this and Deep Star 6 were kind of those, like, Chronicle / Deep Star 6, where it's one where we've done an episode on where one of us really likes it and the other one is the opposite, because we don't do a lot of those.
Right.
Generally, if we dislike it together or we like it together, and it's a terrible movie. I hate this movie.
It's no Deep Star 6.
Another one
sure.
of mine is something that we do agree on, so much so that it's the only movie in Movies on Up history to be number one 2 years in a row on our favorite movies of the year. It is Filth from 2013. I believe it was my number one in 2013 and yours in 2014, because yeah. I went by the UK release date, you went by the US release date. Back-to-back years, it was number one on our
defending
list.
Defending champ.
Yeah, written and directed by John S. Baird, based off the Irvine Welsh novel. And the McAvoy turn is something we recognize a lot on this, even though it probably only makes sense to the two of us. But this was like the tipping point for the McAvoy turn, to where I went from hating McAvoy, and then this year he had Filth, Welcome to the Punch, and Trance all together, and this was the one that pushed me over the edge to be like, oh, he's one of my favorite actors now. So Filth, I think, is perfect. It's one of those that I don't think either of us really find without this podcast. Like, it was one of those.
That's accurate, yeah.
It was when we were doing trailers. Ryan, I watch trailers all the time. Ryan hates watching trailers. So it's one of those that I loved it, and I'm like, you got to watch this trailer. Like, it's great. And we kind of followed it and waited for it to come out and then saw it and both loved it. So I think this one checks a lot of boxes off of why we love movies. And it's not one that we talk about the most. Like, we don't talk about, we've never done a Filth episode. It doesn't really get brought up, I don't think, a whole bunch.
But we do give away the McAvoy Award every year. Yeah. So that certainly plays a role. And outside of Anna Kendrick, very few people are able to defend a crown in this podcast. So yeah, I guess Filth is right up there with Anna Kendrick, who to this point in the anniversary episode
has been
completely non-existent. And I'm going to guess that we're probably not going to rally and be very AK heavy at the end. But hey, at least she got a mention, so good for her. My last one is the first movie that came to mind, and it is also from 2012. Every movie that I had on here was released in 2012.
Coincidentally, the year we started doing the podcast.
The year we started doing the podcast. Yeah, I mean, the Chronicle episode and the Smashed episode were both from 2013. But when we started the show in 2012, it was the week after Avengers had released the original, starring Robert Downey Jr. and just Chris Squared at this point. We hadn't got to Chris Cubed. When Avengers came out, it was a very big talking point for us early on. And fortunately, we've been able to abstain from having additional discussions and breakdowns of the MCU to this point. But this year, the MCU turns 10, and plenty of folks are going to be pondering their favorites from that nearly 20-movie run. And I think we're kind of doing the same here. All these movies that I've mentioned either provided a really great episode like Smashed or have given us kind of a running joke like Chronicle. But in the case of the Avengers or the MCU as a whole, that's provided us with a ton of movies to discuss. And we would have done this podcast with or without the Avengers. The wheels were already turning. But as these movies have grown, they've certainly left a giant imprint on our culture. And I would say a Hulk-sized footprint in this show as well.
Yeah, and it's been cool because it changed the movie landscape and what people expect from blockbusters. And for us to get, I mean, I guess from the ground floor would be 2008. But I mean, we're right there at the Avengers, which at the time was the biggest movie ever. And then to see we've been there weekly for, and obviously we don't follow the box office and we're not doing
anymore.
News like yeah. we used to, but like, it shaped the landscape of movies over the last 6 years. Unlike my last one, which in hindsight probably should have been Pitch Perfect, but I blanked out and I didn't. Ryan mentioned that sometimes there's movies that we talk about a lot or maybe they turn into a running joke. That is what happened to 1984's The Ice Pirates. I think that's kind of our go-to when it's just like, let's bring up a random movie that probably a lot of people haven't seen, or if they've seen it, they don't remember much about
it. Saw it a long time ago, don't know if it still holds up.
Yeah, like, and so that's one of those, like, Ice Pirates is, it was almost my idea for the 6th anniversary episode. I almost wanted to do an Ice Pirates episode, but I haven't. I remember laughing my ass off at this movie. I saw it twice in theaters when I was like 5, and I remember laughing my ass off. I'm afraid it doesn't hold up. I don't even want to watch the trailer for it. But it's one of those, I think it perfectly encompasses, like, I think we dig deep for a lot of our, like, when, I mean, we've been doing lists for 6 years now, and we're still coming up with movies that we haven't mentioned before, and so, I mean,
it's not as often anymore, but
yeah, we've both seen a ton of movies, and we both have this wide, we're familiar, even if we haven't seen it or don't have an opinion, we know about it, so, like, I think we both are so in the landscape of movies that there's a lot that are on our radar, and Ice Pirates, I think, sums that up. It's one of those that you look at 1984, one of the best years ever for movies, and here's this stupid sci-fi movie written and directed by Stuart Raffel, starring Robert Urich. It's probably not even a blip on a lot of people's radars, but it's something that I'm sure I was the first one to just make a crack, but the second I made an Ice Pirates joke and Ryan acknowledged that, like, oh, I'm familiar with the Ice Pirates, it's like, okay, now we're into it. That's why we work together. Like,
it's probably a pet movie, and I think it would lose some of the mystique if we did an Ice Pirates episode.
But I still want to. Maybe last episode.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Because at that point, like, yeah, where does it go? So if it's the last episode and that's our series finale, I don't know of a better way to go out than Ice Pirates. Because I do think that kind of represents us as a show. Just kind of a blip that's not really, you know, doesn't make a giant impact on anything. Kind of a joke. Really, if you go back and listen, our early stuff is pretty painful. So yeah, Ice Pirates. I'm down with that being the most representative of this show.
Yeah, I just threw that one out there. It could have been Pitch Perfect, but I like Ice Pirates. Maybe.
Pitch Perfect holds up. I mean, it's always on cable. I see that a lot.
That's a good movie. See, I didn't see the third one yet because the second one was eh. But I like the first one. I really like the first one.
Did see the third
one. It holds up. The climax, like the final performance scene is up there with Stomp the Yard for me. Is like some of my favorite like performance scenes, climaxes, and movies. So I'm into it. But that was our 6-year episode.
And a bonus breakdown of Pitch Perfect.
Yep. That's what you get here.
Yeah,
bonus breakdown. But yeah, so that was fun. It was a little different, and we're gonna try to mix it up a little this year. I think we say that every year, but we're gonna try to. I have some.
This year we have to. We are officially out of ideas. We're outsourcing.
Yeah. So I have some guest ideas that we'll get, and I'll reach out and we'll get.
Is one of them Anna Kendrick?
I wish. She hasn't returned my calls and still keeps renewing that restraining order.
I keep putting that hair on her doorstep and it...
But then we might do more episodes where we're just kind of laid back and just not necessarily a topic, but we just kind of chit-chat for a little bit just about what we're watching recently and stuff. Basically the stuff we do before we start recording.
We should just do that and I'll just release... I don't want to say many episodes because then I'll have to do two, and I don't want to do that.
No, the less work, the better.
Yeah.
But
you've done a lot.
We'll be back next week with, oh, God. next week, Book Club comes to theater where a bunch of old ladies jerk off to 50 Shades of Grey. So we are going to talk
about
50 Shades of Grey.
Just talk about it. But that's how we're going to kick off our seventh season.
Yeah.
Or seventh year with a big
50
bang.
Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
I didn't, that in hindsight, that was a terrible idea. But then we kick into the rest of the summer. We have Halftime Show coming up in a couple of months, which is always one of my favorite episodes. And it'll be fun summer. I'm excited. So thank you. If you've listened at all in the past 6 years, thank you. If you've been there from the beginning, thank you. If you're just starting, thank you.
Thanks, Jason.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. We will see you next year as we kick off year 7. But until then,
keep it up.